Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right. Just by going to nerdandtie.com, clicking on the sponsor information, and if you toss $20 our way, we'd say something nice about you here. We'd compliment you, we'd say what a handsome and or beautiful person you are, and yes, that's pretty much it. Or you can contribute to our legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie and kick us a few dollars that way. Either way, we'll be your best friend. Or your like second or third best friend. I don't know what your social life is like.
On this Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie, Nobuhiro Watsuki has been arrested for child porn possession. Amazon is developing a Lord of the Rings TV series. Rian Johnson is making a standalone Star Wars trilogy. We've got con news and a mailbag. All this Fortnite on Nerd and Tie.
Woo!
Yeah. Welcome, friends. Welcome.
Oh my god.
To Nerd and Tie. This is a bit of a heavier one. At least. How are you guys doing this Fortnite? I should probably not.
Well, it's the Thanksgiving week.
Well,
so let's all give thanks to the thankfulness of thanking thanks.
Well, at least it's not like an extremely stressful week for anyone here, right?
Hi, I work in retail.
Hi, I work for in the health insurance industry in the Medicare and Retirement Division, and it's AEP.
I work in a warehouse and also in retail. So
it's our busiest time of the year. It's everybody's busiest time of the year. I just admitted to what industry I work in on the internet. That's actually pretty uncommon for me to do.
That is kind of surprising for you.
But since we haven't introduced ourselves, so they don't know who I am.
Excellent. Well, working in an industry that he just revealed to the whole internet, it is the one and only Trey Dorn.
We're pretty sure there's just one. I mean, the technology, although there is a photograph that may prove I have a clone.
Oh dang.
Yeah.
Well, that's unexpected.
Because I was tagged in a photo from a wedding a couple years ago that is a photo that really looks like it's me, yet I was 500 miles away when it happened.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not going to pull the photo up right now, but you'll have to.
I believe you. I definitely believe you. And then meanwhile, avoiding their retail purgatory even for a little bit is the one and only Gen.
Yeah. The only good thing about Black Friday is that we all get to suffer together.
I thought yeah, the only good thing about Black Friday is that if it's bad enough, you won't remember it. Because you'll just black it out.
The other good thing is that
turn Black Friday into Blackout Friday.
I don't know about all retail places, but the ones I've worked at have usually had catering during like Black Friday, because we're pulling all-nighter shifts.
So
that's always good, like getting like nice warm food.
They didn't when I worked retail, but
both of the places I did.
I think they did it the year that I ended up on the afternoon shift on Black Friday.
Usually afternoon on shifts, overnight ones.
I will tell you, afternoon shift on Black Friday, best shift.
Nobody's there.
But because they need someone to be there, they don't have you open, and so you just get to walk in and like it's. Like I will tell you, 2 p.m. on Black Friday is a pretty chill day.
Yeah, I'm really jealous. I work.
Jealous of early 20s me is not something anyone should ever be.
Well, back then, Black Friday didn't start on Thursday.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm fully against this. Like, I hate that. that stores open up on Thursdays. I think that's just
right?
fucked
on
up.
Thursday, I'm pulling a 4 to midnight shift.
Yeah.
Then I get to come home, maybe sleep a few hours, go back in for a 7 to 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, my,
I'm just like,
I have similar Black Friday plans, which is luckily my main job does have Thursday off, and then the Janesville Mall is closed.
Oh, thank goodness
Thursday.
For you.
That I but, think I think malls that close are like on Thanksgiving are the like the big saviors for a lot of retail workers.
No kidding. So I'm thankful for that, but then the next day it's my regular 6 to 2:30 at my normal job, and then 4 to 9 o'clock at the mall job. So
that's gonna be a long day.
Yes, it is. But I've come to terms with that.
Speaking of depressing things.
Oh my God! You're gonna segue from Black Friday into this new story. Oh God! I think that we need to have a mild, serious tone reset. The following story does not match the jovial kind of happy attitude of the last few minutes of talking, and we apologize for abruptly shifting tone.
This is awful.
Commiserating about retail is commiserating about retail is a very different league.
This is true.
Unless
you
work in a really terrible store.
Let him do the story.
Let me do the damn story. This was not originally on our docket, but I specifically requested that we do this one because it's horribly uncomfortable. And if I'm going to be entirely honest, I'm doing this more for my own catharsis than I am for anyone else right now. So earlier today, this day, as we are recording this, prolific Shonen Jump mangaka Nobuhiro Watsuki, creator, writer, and illustrator on the classic samurai manga Rurouni Kenshin, was arrested by the Tokyo Municipal Police for possession of child pornography. Pretty dark way to start this up. There was some wondering of how deep this went, but it was confirmed not that long after he was arrested that Watsuki confessed to the ownership of said child porn, is still in police custody. Under Japanese law, he can face up to 1 year in prison and paying fines of up to 5 million yen. Japan's a little too lenient on that, if you ask me, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
This has been crushing for a lot of people. Not the least of which being myself, as Watsuki's work is, to say the least, been incredibly influential on my life and the lives of tons of people. The notes in his manga are very different from normal author's notes. He doesn't have, for anyone who reads Japanese graphic novels, manga, author's notes are kind of common, but usually toward the back of a collected edition, a tonkuban as they're called. Watsuki doesn't do that. He has notes between every chapter. And when you've been reading his stuff for long enough, you really feel like you get a feel for who the guy is. And a lot of fans are feeling really betrayed right now, including me. I don't want to make this just about me. Obviously, lots of people were hurt. Lots of actual children were hurt.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of people, though, this is going to be hard to wrap their heads around. And I'm feeling this right now because this was such a influential part of my adolescence. Rurouni Kenshin is my favorite manga of all time. Like I have a special shelf for it in my living room, and now it feels tainted and gross, and especially with where we are right now, with a lot of the awful things that a lot of famous people are doing coming to light. I guess I want to open up like maybe a discussion of how do you cope with that when someone when you have something amazing and influential that changes the way you look at so many things, and it's and the artist who made it turns out to be a scumbag.
Yeah, I think it's actually I think it's super difficult. I mean, it's when we talk about Kevin Spacey, when we talk about, obviously, this it's there's so many different I think it's important to understand that it's important to be able to divorce the work from the author to a degree. Like, I think it's still okay to enjoy the things that you enjoyed. Like, to a much lesser degree, I've had this kind of challenge when it comes to like Orson Scott Card's work just because of his politics. Like, this is not even remotely claiming this is in the same league, but like. He's written some really he's said some really homophobic things and some really pretty awful stuff, but the Ender's Game books are like still the a really important set of books to me, like from my childhood, and so I've what I've I guess what is what I've tried to do is not support the artists while still letting myself enjoy the art. Like attempt to like not if Orson Scott Card puts out a new book series, I'm not gonna buy it. And just
And
so
I know Anita Sarkeesian calls that the line in the sand theory,
yeah.
where you still treasure the thing from the things from before you knew that the artist was a monster, but
Well,
afterward
because
you try to not support
yeah,
them.
the creation is not the creator.
Right. Yeah,
It's
that's it's something that as an artist, as a creator, you learn pretty early on, and it's a very hard thing to do, but you need to do it to divorce yourself from your work. You are not your work. And I think that's something that consumers need to understand,
Well, it's
is that
yeah.
they're not the same.
Well, it's, like, and I know this comes in more with criticism and interpretation when you talk about the battle between author intent and death of the author. But I think like I don't ever want to financially support bad people.
Right.
Like that's why I'm not going to pay money to go see a Woody Allen movie. That's why I'm not going to do lots of, I'm not going to go I'm not going to buy anything with Kevin Spacey in it going forward because I don't want him to get more work. It's why I'm not going to to in a different category of things anything involving Mel Gibson, it's
Well, and in that case, I mean, pirating in general is seen as a bad thing, but in this particular case,
Well,
pirating could be used as a
I
way to
don't
like
to
still enjoy the
protest.
work, but not
I still
contribute
don't.
to the artist.
I guess I
I don't
don't. I don't advocate necessarily pirating. What I just advocate is I just stop consuming new media. But I don't let it. Like I let myself still enjoy. Like I own. I own The Usual Suspects. I have that movie. Just to Kevin Spacey is just an easy example because
Recent.
I have well it's done hor did a hor did horrible stuff
Right.
and but I have media of with him in it in my apartment so I will always enjoy it. Fuck man I'm sorry for swearing but that's a movie directed by Bryan Singer isn't
Wow,
it
that's a double whammy.
like
Ugh.
I love The Usual Suspects. I don't I will enjoy it every single time I watch it. But I know that it's not like like it's I'm not gonna like support either of their stuff going forward. You know what I mean? It's I'm not gonna buy a new movie. I'm just not gonna let it color the like it colors the way I look at the man, not the creation. So it's
Yeah.
No, I see that. And I'm like, it all makes sense. It's just, like, I guess in this particular case, like, and I'm used to thinking stuff like that. I mean, God, like, I mean, like, just the ones you mentioned, like, the original Mad Max is still one of my favorite movies.
Right. Yeah, and, no, it's, yeah.
Yeah. And Mel Gibson is a garbage person.
Mel Gibson is a garbage person. I still enjoy the first three Mad Max films. And I, you know, it's, I don't feel as bad with, like, something like that. With an older film like that, because I don't think if someone starts buying The Road Warrior, the second Mad Max film, that Mel Gibson's going to get more movies. And he was already paid to be in that movie. I don't think he gets a cut of the back end on that. So,
like that makes sense. I guess it's just like, for here I am, like, the thing
now,
that
if George
me...
Miller did something, then it would be an issue.
But, and like, but here it is like this... I guess it this is an especially weird one for me personally. And again, I don't want to turn this into Nick's pity party because, again, actual children were hurt by this.
Yeah.
Actual freaking children. Rurouni Kenshin, that book series, and it's not even so much I couldn't give fewer craps about the anime, honestly.
That's the only
like,
thing I have experience with.
I don't really, I'm okay with it, but I could kind of take it or leave it. The manga, on the other hand, made up my life philosophy for years. It was a moral compass for me. It was one of those points that I could rely on for goodness and like direction for myself. And the fact that it was written. The fact that it was written by a monster, that it just hurts me now.
Yeah.
Like, so much of what I used, so much of what I grew up on and what defined my adolescent years are now completely tainted, and I'm really not sure what to make of that. Ugh. I'm especially happy right now. I had not bought, Watsky himself was working on a continuation to Rurouni Kenshin that has a United States distributor.
Mm-hmm.
I should mention that his publisher, Shueisha, have indefinitely put the book on hiatus.
Yeah.
They've put a kibosh on it. They've ended it. And I don't know about the American publisher, but yeah, I'm not going to be touching that continuation.
Yeah,
absolutely not.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I think it's you know, it 2016 was the year that when we see a famous person's name trending, that we would go, oh God, I hope they're not dead. Oh God, I hope they're not dead. Oh God, I hope they're not dead. 2017 it seems to be. You see a famous person's name trending on social media, and instead you go, God, I hope they're just dead. God, I hope they're just dead.
Yeah, like, I literally just had someone say the same thing to me on another piece of social media, like, sent me that same reaction in regards to Watsky. It's just... It's so awful, and I guess this is another time for, you know, for nerddom just remember to, like, to have one of those moments of introspection and self-reflection, and I hope everyone else out there, if this is affecting you as much as it affected me, that you find a way to cope, because I'm still struggling with that, but...
Yeah.
So that's our ugly story we're starting off the show with.
I'm just saying that if it turns out that Rumiko Takahashi has a pile of dead bodies in her backyard, I'm going to be really mad.
Right?
Right?
Well, this has been a really rough week all already for like 90s anime hits, because like the original actors who played Bulma in Dragon Ball and also Ukyo and Ranma died.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like this has been just an ugly week for retro anime fans.
Yeah.
Whew. Yeah.
Right. Is there anything happy on the docket?
Define happy.
Yeah, maybe. We're not sure about it yet. But Amazon has announced that they're interested in creating a new Lord of the Rings TV show.
Well, they're not just interested.
Yeah.
Because we talked about it when they were interested.
Yeah.
They're going forward with
it. They signed a thing.
Yep. So the reason why this is happening is that Christopher Tolkien, who is J.R.R.'s son and former, how do I want to phrase it, like holder of the estate, holder of
the head of the Tolkien
the whole
estate.
Franchise.
Yeah.
He has stepped down, and for a long time he was holding the reins on everything, and he wasn't in it for the money at all, which is why we didn't see a crap ton of just like Lord of the Rings this and Lord of the Rings that and crap shoots of everywhere and everything, because he's really in it for, you know, his father's sake and for the story's sake. And that's why one of the last things he released was the story of Beren and Lúthien, which is an allegory of his parents. So okay. That was a nice little memorial thing that he did. The others in the Tolkien family are not as
obsessive,
not as held back as as he is with the financial part of it.
Yeah, well, we got to remember Christopher Tolkien hated Peter Jackson's trilogy. And we're talking about the good trilogy, not the
right.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
not the other
and
one.
I'll be perfectly honest. JR himself would probably have hated it completely.
Yeah,
I can see
he probably
that.
Would have hated every adaption and just like nitpicked the crap out of them.
I don't know. I think he would have loved the Uruk-hai song from the from the
Bakshi or.
No. It was from the Rankin Bass.
Oh, okay.
The Rankin Bass. Because, the Bakshi one was weird and used way, way, way too much rotoscoping.
But
that
Bakshi.
Was nothing. Yes. But it was nothing compared to Rankin Bass, who, after Bakshi didn't finish his passion project, made their own movie featuring Uruk-hai singing.
Yeah. I'll say, Ralph Bakshi has never seen a rotoscope he doesn't love.
This is true. This is true. Just... For the younger people in our audience, they're like, "What? I don't know what a Bakshi is, but I'm scared of it now."
Google Ralph Bakshi, man. Google Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah.
It's,
then go watch Wizards, because that's actually pretty good.
So
Amazon's making a show.
Yeah, and this one is, the storyline is set to take place between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings.
Well, do we know that? All they've said it was set to take place before The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
They haven't specified. Like, they've been super vague, as in, like, between The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings, or before all of it.
That's what we're speculating. I've been reading up on it on theonering.net,
okay.
Which is my news source for Tolkien stuff. And they said, like, yeah, we're pretty sure it's going to be between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. Personally, I'm not sure what they're going to do in that time frame, because there's not a lot of information that Tolkien wrote about that time.
A lot of crazy stuff from before any of that.
So,
I think
the Silmarillion's off the table completely. No one can do anything with
the
Silmarillion.
Why can't people do anything
that's not
with
going
the Silmarillion?
Anywhere.
Why?
They don't have the rights to it, I don't think. Nobody has the rights to it.
Well, someone has to have the rights to it. The Tolkien estate has to have the rights to it.
Yeah, but they haven't... They're not giving up on that one.
See, that's... that. Okay, so
go,
this is...
Go
this...
hit up Marquette University. They can hook up.
So I want to explain how stupid this is, because you know the whole reason why we got a trilogy of Hobbit movies and not just two Hobbit movies? Like, the whole reason why there's, like, you could see Peter Jackson's Hobbit working as a two movie, like, setup, you know, like, but we ended up with three movies that were just really drawn out. You know why that happened? Because Warner Brothers wanted him to, when he had a plan for a two Hobbit, like the Hobbit as two movies, they wanted him to make a movie that took place between the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings. And Peter Jackson said, there is no way that that makes any sense, that, like, there's no story there. Like,
well,
Peter Jackson,
now.
And so Peter Jackson, that's when Peter Jackson said, okay, I'll make a trilogy, and, like, ended up with doing what he did. Like,
granted, you have to also remember, though, Warner Brothers was in a really tight, red-ass stupid spot at that point, because they were panicking because their main tentpole of the last decade before that, the Harry Potter films, had been coming to an end, and they needed a long form film series to keep that keep that money rolling in.
Yeah.
So,
So basically, all
viewers at home, Nick is not actually, like, physically frozen. You can hear him fine. Everybody can hear him fine, but I don't know what it looks like for Gen. But Nick's video froze with him, and kind of like it looks like he's asleep.
Yeah,
like nobody poke him.
I'm not asleep.
It's like your eyes are closed, your head is tilted down, your mouth is slightly open.
I mean, I can fall asleep for, like, the rest of the show if you guys want.
It's just hilarious that the frame that your camera chose to freeze on is, like, just not, like, even remotely flattering.
I'm not even getting video from you guys anymore. So
I haven't been sending video, but okay. So anyways, we'll keep going.
Well, back to the story at hand. Basically, the only properties that are available to use for video purposes, I believe, I'd have to double check, but I believe they can only use anything that's within the Lord of the Rings books and the Hobbit books.
Oh.
Which includes the appendices, which is where they got the Aragorn and Arwen storyline. That's in one of the appendices.
Yeah.
Last one.
Oh, boy.
That's all they get to work with.
Appendices,
so,
the series. Can't wait.
Well, and there's really not much to the appendices.
I know.
I mean,
there's not.
It'd be really cool.
Peter Jackson tossed most of those into the movies.
I know. There is a... there's a listing of all the kings of Gondor, so it'd be cool if they did kind of a history of Gondor and went through, like, the time
Gondor of Thrones,
right?
That's what they're doing. Oh my god, no!
I'm really grasping for straws.
Amazon specifically wanted a Game of Thrones competitor. That is literally the whole reason they're doing this. I mean, it's Amazon
wanted that. They would use the Children of Húrin.
But I'm just saying, they're gonna just...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're trying. They're gonna try so hard to do another
50-50
fantasy rival TV show.
This is gonna be crap. They're gonna spend billions of dollars on this, but it's okay. It's gonna be terrible. But on the other hand, it's on Amazon Prime, so, like, five of us will watch it.
I was like, so five people are gonna see it.
The tick is great.
Oh. So, ultimate take on this is, we're not sure where this is going or what they're going to do.
The ultimate take is, why God, why.net?
What a freaking mess.
Yeah.
What a freaking mess.
And there's a reason I'm not excited about this at all.
Yeah, and I don't blame you. Jiminy Christmas.
I mean, what would be cool is just do, like a single episode that's just Tom Bombadil. That would make people happy.
Why not just do
three
Tom Bombadil the series?
3 hours.
Just like Tom Bombadil the movie.
Tom Bombadil the extended edition, which will be two discs and will include all those deleted scenes
where they say
other things about how hot his wife is, and then they smoke a pipe for another like extra like 25 minutes.
Yep.
I'm all for it.
All right.
Oh my gosh. I thought I would feel better, but I don't.
It's okay. I'm drawing. The people, video viewers are getting to. I forgot I had a telestrator function, and so I'm drawing on Nick right now for video viewers at home.
Well, I can't see it, so what's the point?
Oh my God, he's back!
I just put my camera off and back on again.
Hey.
Yeah, all right.
Just like we did in the Bronx, where I am from.
You are not from the Bronx. Anyways.
Let's see.
Speaking of unexplored stories connected to very well-known film trilogies.
Yeah, well, let's look at there is something kind of that it could be kind of cool. Usually, if the Marvel movies are any indication, when Disney really likes something that a director puts out, they start talking to those directors about doing way more with the franchise, even when the audience hasn't seen it yet. Like we saw with the Russo brothers when after test screenings of Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
It looks like Disney feels pretty strongly about Episode 8 of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because they want Rian Johnson to stick around and make another Star Wars trilogy.
Not just one.
Well,
three.
But a trilogy.
Three more.
No, not three trilogies, just one trilogy.
No, yeah, three, which means three more movies.
Three more movies, though.
Right.
That's pretty. That's.
But Nick said make
not just
another...
one more movie.
Right.
He made it sound like three more trilogies.
You made it
nine
sound like
movies.
Three more trilogies.
Nine movies.
Rian Johnson forever.
So
100 years, Rian Johnson.
This may also explain, though, why Rian Johnson supposedly turned down Episode 9.
That might explain it if they were like, to be honest, if I was given the options of, hey, tie up these story elements, or here's the sandbox, go make an entirely new castle for yourself.
Well, yeah, that's...
Yeah.
That's the cool thing, is so, like, the writing's on the wall for Lucasfilm, that they can only, the Skywalker saga ends with Episode 9. Like
Which
they,
is good.
They said it was going to. They're not going to do episodes 10, 11, 12. You know, it's they want to just, you know, do because Lucas always said it was going to be 9 episodes at once he made up the fact that there were that episode 4 was where we were starting.
Right.
let's be very clear. He was pulling all that crap out of his rear end. But. So, yeah, this is going to be a whole new thing because they know that they need to explore Star Wars. And, you know, these so far, the anthology films, we've gotten Rogue One, which is amazing, but very much interconnected to the original trilogy. The Han Solo movie is very much connected into the original trilogy because it's frickin' Han Solo.
I can't wait for that movie.
Like, these anthology movies have been very tied in still to the main trilogy and not branching out into this broader world that we have, which is, you know, they've been good. So, well, I mean, we've had two movies out of the new Star Wars universe, and they've both been good. And Rian Johnson's Episode 8 is coming out pretty soon and in a couple weeks, and hopefully that will also be good.
Yeah, but, I'm pretty jazzed for it. And the idea of him doing an original trilogy, I'm curious where they want to put it. If they're going to like go somewhere far into the future, or maybe we'll see like the Old Republic or, you know, some other like crazy stuff. Like,
yeah, I think it would be an interesting thing. I think it's going to be Nick froze again. But at least he's not asleep in his new freeze. Now he's just looking snarky.
Just looking pensive.
Yeah, now he's looking thoughtful. I'm okay with Nick freezing like this. It's more flattering. All right. So, like, I think it's going to be hard to do something without the Empire. But they're going to have to, because the Empire is such a narrow window of time in the Star Wars universe, so much so that they had to create the offshoot, the First Order, for the new trilogy. Like, I mean, that's actually really interesting. Like, politically, the Empire really only exists for that like a 20-year period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that impressive an empire. But
their ideals live on. Oh, come on. You say that, Trey. But we still call Alexander the Great Alexander the Great, even though he lived for a shorter time than I've been alive,
and his
kingdom immediately fell apart after he died.
You call him Alexander the Great. I call him Alexander the Just Kind of Okay.
Oh,
that's right. On Alexander the Great. Next, I'm going after Charlemagne, and you try to stop me.
But his paladins were great. Also, I still got your back, Iskandar.
And we're all going to sing songs from Pippin.
Can we?
No, because I don't know him.
Join us. Leave your field to flower. Join us. Leave your cheese to sow. Okay, no, we're not gonna do.
Oh.
You'd rather be a. Okay.
I'm gonna Darth Vader. No.
Maybe the new Star Wars could be a musical.
Ooh.
No, we don't want to do that again.
We
don't want to repeat it last time.
I got three words for you: rapping Jar Jar Binks.
No.
Oh, I just wanted to throw up. Thank you. Thank you for that. I want to throw up now.
We'll call it...
I don't know. I guess I've gotten enough Star Wars musical numbers.
We'll call it Gungan style.
Thanks. And we don't have B. Arthur around anymore, so...
Yeah, I know.
Unless we can relive the magic of the holiday special, I think that's out.
CGI B. Arthur, the way we brought back Tarkin.
Yeah, see? I was just about to ask, are they going to do that? Are they going to CGI any more dead people?
Oh. But anyway, so I'm excited about...
Endless possibilities.
This is really cool. I do hope... Yeah. I hope that by the time Rian Johnson gets to do it, though, that Disney's more comfortable, and they'll just kind of let him just off the short leash and able to just kind of look at other stuff. Like, I don't know.
Well... We've seen what directors can do when they are given a longer leash, i.e. Thor Ragnarok.
Well, and we've also seen what happens if they give a director a longer leash and he's not able to do anything good. Colin Trevorrow. as getting canned from episode 9. Like, they see what you can do, like, you know, turn in something. Okay, yeah, this is fine, this is good, go do something amazing. Or you turn in something and it's like, Colin, do that again.
You know, you can only make the Book of Eli so many times before.
So it's I'm excited because it means that Disney's long-term strategy is to explore new territory. You know, we know we can't stop them from milking the franchise. We can't. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just going to happen no matter what. So I'd rather see them milk it by exploring new things than to over-milk the established parts. And possibly diminish the pre-existing material.
Yeah, because like as much as I would love to see, for example, Ewan McGregor get to wear the Jedi robes again. On the other hand, I don't want to just keep seeing new stuff about characters who I already like that could possibly make me annoyed with those characters.
Yeah, I will say the Obi-Wan The Obi-Wan movie's the only one I wanted. Like, I don't want Han Solo.
The only thing that bums me out, though, was that, like, I was like, wow, the Obi-Wan movie sounds really cool. And, like, if you did, like, a solo Obi-Wan movie, you could make it, like, an old samurai movie. But then someone already told me, and then I got to it and I confirmed, there's already an episode of Star Wars, The Clone Wars, that is Obi-Wan in a samurai movie.
Yeah.
They literally had Obi-Wan in a space version of Seven Samurai, which is a great idea, but that means that most of that territory has been explored pretty thoroughly.
You could explore it a second time. Most of us haven't watched the TV shows.
Yeah, but the TV shows
That Obi-Wan has gotten himself the last desperate defender of something like 20 times between episodes 3 and 4.
Okay, that's like, true. I'm just saying the TV shows, the cartoons are completely canon now, though.
I know.
Saw Gerrera is a Clone Wars character.
I know he is.
The Ghost and Chopper showed up in Rogue One. I mean,
yeah. Oh, I'm not saying that it isn't previously explored territory, but mm-hmm. you know, like.
It's true. Obi-Wan probably is a lot like Kambei Shimada.
He is a troublemaker.
Mm-hmm.
Obi-Wan is just terrible. If he was better at his job, Darth Vader wouldn't have happened.
Obi-Wan kind of is the Kambei from Seven Samurai of Jedi, now that I think about it.
Oh. All right. So speaking of, we have more to talk about Star Wars?
I don't think so. Good luck, Rian Johnson. You sound cool.
Good luck to Rian Johnson. Good luck is something that Wizard World is going to need. I was going to go with a desert wizard joke with Obi-Wan, but then we kind of lost that thread a little bit. But Wizard World, the massive chain of conventions, has had a rough couple of years. They went in 2015 from like having like, is it 25 conventions in 2015 to they've got 17 planned for 2018 right now. And two of those are events that they originally scheduled to have happen in 2017, that this year in 2017, that they canceled and postponed till 2018. And if you cancel your con, but say it's happening next year, that means you canceled the con. You didn't postpone it. But
right.
That's, you know. Yeah, anyways. well, financial report after financial report, the company's been losing money. They had a massive cash infusion from their chairman in 2016 from his financial firm, Bristol. They infused $2.475 million after a couple of years of loss of multi-million dollar losses. And Wizard World, in their latest earnings report, has stated that things are not getting better. Things are, in fact, getting worse. And they had a Wizard Inc. stated the the company had a loss from operations of $4,454,875 and $1,182,246 for the 9 months ended September 30, 2017, and the year ended December 31st, 2016, respectively. Blah, 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 blah. I could go... There's... but most importantly, and this is... due to these conditions, there's substantial doubt that the company's ability to continue is a going concern through November 2018. They don't believe that unless there is massive changes at Wizard World, that the company is going to be functional after the end of next year.
I'm not surprised.
No.
they spelled out options in their earnings thing, but most of it involved getting external money and rejiggering things. It's just, it's not... This is like just bailing water from, like, infusing external cash isn't really a good solution. It's bailing water from a sinking boat without plugging the leak. Like, it might keep you from dying longer, but if you don't plug the leak and fix the damn boat, you're still going under.
Yep.
Yeah. I can't even pretend that I'm surprised about this.
Yeah.
Because it's been clear Wizard World has seen better days. And
well, it's because they got arrogant. So the problem is that Wizard World over the last few years, they've seen decreasing revenue per show. They've seen less profitability per show, but they've seen a rising cost. And because as celebrity-driven cons have permeated the market, the cost per guest has risen for conventions that do the autograph cons, because they've oversaturated the market. Now, it's no longer...
And like we said, that oversaturation also means people are less likely to go to all of them because they're all essentially the same thing.
Right. It's Wizard World, Wisconsin, their Madison show. It's literally just a not that far drive from Chicago, which is their big flagship show, the Wizard World Chicago. And so it's not like people in Wisconsin had a hard, like, the people who motivated people would still make the trip to Chicago, right? But the problem is, so, yeah, there are some attendees that are only going to, that couldn't make that kind of drive, right? There is a category, but it's not enough. And so you begin cannibalizing your own profits. And there have been countless number of opportunities for me to go see David Tennant within a 3-hour drive of where I am now in the last few years. Like, if I pick a famous actor, I could probably go see them. And so it's, while the first year that shows start up in an area, it seems special to be able to go see the stars of your favorite shows, it stops becoming special and starts becoming commonplace, and you become less likely to attend those events.
Especially when it's 2 or 3 times a year in two different cities that are driving distance from you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not exciting anymore.
But because, so even the people who do attend these multiple shows, because if they already saw that celebrity at another show, they're not going to buy the autograph at that new show. So your operating cost is still really high as an organizer. And even though you had tickets in the door, your amount of revenue, like the high point of the revenue are the photo op and autograph sales at these cons, that Wizard World gets a cut of those. And if you reduce the number of those sold per show, while still those same celebrities have rising guarantees due to the onslaught and competition for their appearances now, there is no way to make money in this business. Right.
You
now.
Can only meet Norman Reedus so many times.
Well, no, you can only get canceled on by Norman Reedus so many times.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's the Walking Dead actors are notorious for having to cancel on cons if they take place during shooting, because they often have to come in for reshoots and things like that. So it's a cliche that actor from The Walking Dead cancels because of, you know, work conflict.
Well, they got to go walk the dead or whatever it is they do.
All right. Make sure they poop.
Oh, dear Lord.
That's the best job, to be the person who makes sure the zombies poop. Hashtag life goals.
No.
Hashtag zombie poop.
God, we should name the episode that. Anyway,
I was just gonna make a turkey joke with the episode title.
That's good too.
Here we go. This is, man, I wish the Wizard World story had broken like a week later than it has, because then I've written this year, Wizard World may be the biggest Thanksgiving turkey of them all.
Oh, ouch.
Man, I could have still made that pun. They were talking about it not being able to continue after November 2018, specifically.
Oh,
God, missed opportunity.
Good job.
So many puns I could have made.
Well, what else do we have to talk about, maybe con-related?
In November.
In November,
I don't know.
You don't know?
This donkey little con that we were all at last weekend called Daishokan.
Daishokan, you say?
I love the Daishokans.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we all went...
It was Daishokan's 10th year, and all of us were present doing various things, including...
Yes, I was present, and by that, I mean my being there was a gift to you all. Daishokan, it was my first year back there for a while. Daishokan, for those unaware, is an annual anime convention in the Wisconsin Dells in Wisconsin.
At the Kalahari.
Yes, at the Wisconsin
Park
Kalahari.
Park,
yes. And, it's... I had a lot of fun this year. I haven't been to a DaishoCon for a while. And it was
so good.
It was fun to be back. I will say that con is really straining in that space.
Yeah, it was weird this year, especially with they've been growing and growing, and they're really sausage packed in there, and two, there's a lot of attendees, and it does not feel like there's enough staff to keep things in order all the time.
The space is an issue. And I know that the Kalahari is going to be opening an expansion in 2019, so it won't help for next year, but it'll help the year after that.
Right.
Most of the time, I did not have a problem finding staff. Or volunteers, really? Because
the only areas where I saw staff regularly were by the panel rooms while I was doing panels. Other than that, like in any of the other areas, I don't think I hate them coming out negative, because I really did have a good time. I don't think I got badged once this weekend.
Oh, really? I got badged quite a
bunch. I don't think I was badged even a single time this entire weekend.
See, I got badged a lot. Not necessarily like badge, but like, because I carry my, I sometimes forget my badge. So I tie my badge to my belt because I hate having things hanging around my neck, like around the height that every badge hangs, like in the middle of my chest. So I tie it around my belt, and then I usually make sure it's hanging. But like when I go to the bathroom, I slip it in my pocket, and sometimes I forget to pull it out of my pocket. So, I get badged. And that's usually my test to see if people are paying attention. So it's maybe possible that people were checking your badge without actually asking for it.
I think
the volunteers blended in. The volunteers were wearing a different color shirt than the regular staff.
I'm going to say this, though. They were blending in. They were blending in very well, because a lot of those cases where I wasn't badged, there was no one at the door at all. So,
well, there were, they didn't, some of the sections of the convention weren't badged by door, but they actually badged an entire hallway. Like, the hallway that the artist, not the artist, the Ambassador Alley was down.
Mm-hmm.
They had a badger on one end of that hallway, and then around the corner on the other. So, like, there's a vendor room door in the middle there that is surrounded by a badged area, and that includes tabletop gaming also, and one of the entrances to the VGR.
Well, that makes sense, because then they don't have to have
someone at each entrance. Four people.
I will say, the thing about that, though, is actually they shifted part of the way. Like, you know, in the mornings, they were doing the room doors at the beginning and then shifted to doing the hallways. And all I could think was that I could have totally, like, walked in the middle, but in that middle shift, sat down at one of the ambassador tables. And then as they restarted the badging at the ends of the hallways, just walked into places. Like, that would take, like, knowledge of shift changes and... You know,
there were definitely some issues, though.
When I was trying to get my artist badge, I did overhear some staff members talking about the how understaffed they were.
Mm.
Well,
so that was a thing. I don't know how understaffed, maybe just by just a few people, I hope. But that was a thing that they were having to deal with.
Mm, I noticed it a lot. Personally.
But otherwise,
yeah, I will say getting volunteers is always a problem for conventions. DaishoCon still maintains their non-compete rules for their staff, where if you staff another con, you cannot staff, like, you can volunteer, but you can't staff DaishoCon, which I think is always going to be a limiting factor. So I've never quite I've understood the idea that someone can't have like an elected position at another convention if they have like their department head or something, but for general staffers not being able to also staff other cons, it is a massive limiter.
It's like, very odd. Yeah.
Because like I would probably try to staff Daishokan if it didn't mean that I would have to leave No Brand Con. You know what I mean? As I'm currently a member of the No Brand Con staff. But as a member of the No Brand Con staff, if we chose to bring Nexpo back, it wouldn't be a problem. But the fact, right. like, there's, I mean, this is a little behind the sausage, but we probably would have launched Nexpo a year earlier if it weren't for the fact that we were waiting for Nick to leave Daishokan staff.
It is true.
That's and like yeah, that's a true story. It's we literally waited to start working on that plan until Nick was no longer a Daishokan staffer because. Back when Fur was a part of Nerd and Tie, well, part of the podcast, I should say, like we were talking about it, and Nick told us that he couldn't work on a convention because at the time he was still a Daishokan staffer, and so I think that's a limiting thing, and it also means that their staff's a little more isolated, which means they have less networking to get more volunteers.
It felt like, and I can't speak for how they are now. This might have changed. It felt like when I was still on staff that they wanted, that some of the leadership seemed to want that isolation, which I did not understand.
But, I don't know if that's the actual attitude, but I do know that the non-compete is still in effect. Because and this is just a coincidental conversation that was in front of me, is that a Daishokan staffer was asked why they didn't join the staff of another con in front of me would have been a convenient thing for them to also staff. And they actually, so the weird thing is that Daishokan staffer was asked to volunteer at another con and was told that they, and the Daishokan staffer responded that they couldn't because of the non-compete, which didn't make sense to me because I was always under the impression that they could still volunteer elsewhere.
I would say, yeah, volunteer.
We used
to do that all the time. So,
but that could also
understood.
That could also just be that one person misunderstanding their convention's own rules. I didn't know who this person was, other than the fact that they were wearing a Daishokan shirt, and this is what they said. So,
I didn't recognize any of the staff.
Yeah, it's I hadn't been for a long time.
Three
so.
Of them.
Yeah. So you know it's. I think that the non-compete is a mistake because first off, it's still considering the conventions as being in competition with each other. Like, how insane is it, the idea that a Daishokan worker couldn't work at No Brand Con?
Yeah, that is very strange.
Like, there are three cons in the Dells and two of them are anime cons. And why wouldn't you want to, like, I mean, just to go to another con for free? Like, other con staffs are like the bread and butter for volunteer hours.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention that they're way easier to work with because they require way less training.
Right.
Because they already sort of have a grasp of what it is they're supposed to be doing. Yeah,
a person who works for con A goes to volunteer at con B. There may be things that are different in the operations, but they understand basic principles. You know, it's, maybe the two cons don't do everything the same way, but, like, I don't know. It's what is Daishokan's operational model? Are they a 501c3, a C4, a C7?
I don't remember. And a lot of the stuff with the when they were setting up the nonprofit was when I was starting to step away.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I know that they are a nonprofit organization.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's Wisconsin's irritating because you can't tell what kind of nonprofit they are from the state stuff, and depending on what kind of, anyways, I mean, I guess I could go dig through IRS stuff, but that just seems like work. I was hoping
not to get too I guess I'm sorry I derailed us so much into staff talk, because beyond that, like, what I mean, like, I had those issues, but that was not to say that the con didn't do a lot of things really well.
Yeah.
And I would be lying if I said I didn't have lots of fun or that I didn't see some improvements that were fantastic. Like, there was a non-binary friendly bathroom set up, and that was fantastic. I was very happy they did that.
Yeah. I thought the convention was pretty, like, so listeners who, man, like, the three of us are all, like, long-term, you know, like, we've been staffing for years, so we're nitpicking here.
Right.
I mean, also Nick gets a little overcritical, maybe, of a convention that he co-founded.
Mm-hmm. I hold them to pretty high standards.
You do. I will say from my experiences there, I found that I had no problem finding staff at any moment. I was there from early in the morning to late in the day, like on the floor. So I had no problem finding staff. I found things pretty well run. Their program guide had some issues.
The program guide was
where say
I will.
There was a guest bio
right
who's so I'm not going to say that a certain band had the bio listed for a different guest, but that
literally
happened.
The same guest from the opposite page.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And that the phrase "to control room" may have become a minor running gag between me and Archimize.
To control room.
The Empress.
No idea where the control room was.
I know where it is.
It was near the top of the A.
It
was at the top of the A.
I also never saw the program guide, so I can't nitpick it at all. I'm sorry.
It was super typo-y filled misspelling filled, and
it was amazingly bad.
Daisho, though, has a very, unfortunately, I think even when I was on staff, the program guide was always dreadful. And I think there's a systemic problem that needs to be addressed.
And I don't want to throw rocks from a glass house. I work for a convention that has had program guide issues. Like, depending on what year you look at it, it's like, I've major criticisms. I have major criticisms for, like, say, even my own convention, like No Brand Con's last year's program guide. But I also want to be clear that I am speaking here as an individual and not a representative for any other group. But I want to say that, like, overall, though, I thought DaishoCon was really well. I thought it was pretty well run. Everything I didn't like, I mean, program guide aside, which was just kind of more amusing than anything else. And every problem I had with DaishoCon was just that it's getting so big for its space. Parking was impossible. Parking was impossible. Navigating the hallways was getting, the
lineup for the cosplay contest turned into an actual fire hazard.
Yeah, no, I genuinely felt bad for the DaishoCon staffers who, like, were having, like, people yell at them while they were trying to just keep some minor sense of order with that.
There's some stuff, and I shouldn't act like I'm just saying this out of because I'm being a jerk. I do want to send some of this their way. Like, I kind of hope that maybe they'll look into some stuff like what Anime NebraskaCon has done, where they'll have for lines for big events. They'll send out two staffers with flags, one with a flag that says beginning of line and one with a flag that says end of line. And the person at the end of the line just keeps moving with each new person who joins the line to show where you line up.
Yeah.
That's really brilliant. And that's actually what my store does on Black Friday, because the line for the registers will wrap around the entire store. So we'll have someone with a balloon.
Great way of doing
I had an amazingly fun time at DaishoCon, and I don't want to, like, sound like I'm harping on their staff, because really my problems just came down to the fact that it's so many people in with hallways that narrow. Like, you couldn't navigate that one end of Artist Alley.
Actually, now that you mention it, okay, one other I want to go over some positives eventually, but I do have one other issue I do want to bring up. And it relates to the Artist Alley. A lot of the doors to the main programming events were moved to the other side of the hallway to the other hallway on the opposite side where the doors to the regular panel rooms are. This might not seem like a problem, except that it meant most of the artists down on that end, like on the far end on the main programming side, because they weren't using those doors as entrances for most of the weekend, a lot of those artists got next to no traffic all weekend.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the other end was a death glut.
Yeah, the other end was the death glut where the fire hazard that I mentioned earlier formed.
Yeah, it's because, I had a... our friend Ethan's table was down by the death glut end, and I actually didn't know where it was until Sunday. Because the crowds were so deep that, I wouldn't have seen their table if I wasn't, right in front of it.
Yeah.
That's totally
that was
legit.
Getting... So take that experience, multiply it by 100, and there's Anime Expo.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
So
I don't doubt you. I'm.
But
just,
Anime
I
Expo
just
is
really
also cool. Much bigger.
And there's, the space is much bigger too. There.
You're talking factors of 100 bigger.
But speaking as one of the artists in the Artist Alley at Daishokan, I was situated in the middle of the hallway. I was actually right outside the Daishotorium, which wasn't so much a bad thing, except whenever there was a big, huge panel in that room and there was a line to get into that room, because I would have a line of people in front of my table, just standing there, not letting traffic through to my table. It did mean that those people standing in line had to stare at my artwork and eventually bought some.
Mm-hmm. So but yeah, that was
silver lining. But I wish there was some way.
Well, you know, that tail
still
end,
let traffic through.
You know, even when main programming had its doors open to the, I know that we're talking about layout stuff that people who've never been to Daishokan may not know, but the. So for those of you who don't who've never been to Daishokan, most of the con is laid out like a giant capital A, where it's in hallways. So you've got there are two it would be a giant eight, except at the bottom of it two hallways don't connect. But in the middle is their main programming, and so when there are doors to main programming to both sides, it's just that they you know whether or not they choose to open them. And it's always the end of the Artist Alley, even when registration was down that hallway, back, when there was a small enough population where you could put it down that hallway. That section of Artist Alley has always gotten far less foot traffic than, say, that as you get more towards the cross,
I don't know. I thought the other end used to be where all the traffic was when there wasn't as much stuff down by where the death glut is now.
See,
when,
to be fair, the death glut area, there didn't used to be any Daishokan in those rooms.
Yeah, now the vendor room is right
there. There was
in
stuff
there.
In there. It just
no,
wasn't, there
no.
just wasn't much stuff.
There wasn't anything in some years when they were at the Kalahari because other groups... literally rented them out. My Artist Alley table 1 year was in front of a room with a conference going on Friday for something unrelated to the convention.
It was Friday, but the other days, I remember setting this up, Trey. This is my thing.
I will fight you on this! Okay, maybe you're right, but... I seed that maybe the convention, but it wasn't it wasn't major focus areas though, because the
no it wasn't. But that's what I'm saying. The Death Glut area used to be the crappy spot to be.
Yeah.
And the area where there was next to no traffic this year used to be the really good place to be. So
although
switched.
To be fair, the Death Glut area, I always wonder how many of those people know that. Hey, I remember when a dog pooped right there. Because one year, a dog pooped right in front of my Artist Alley table at Daishokan.
It's true.
The dog belonged to the younger sister of the then con director.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny.
going, things that I really, like I said, there were a lot of things that went really well at this con.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was really impressed with the organization of some of the events. I was happy with the guest lineup this year. Selfishly, I was really pleased to finally meet Tony Oliver. That was neat.
Yeah.
The cosplay contest was pretty freaking phenomenal, actually. In particular, while I was not a fan of the bizarre music choices that were played during the walk-ons, I'm not sure who your DJ was, but I understand that you want to get your money's worth out of those Full Metal Alchemist soundtracks, but you can only use that opening so many times before people start noticing. Just throwing that out there.
That's the one thing we saw issue with the whole thing, was that, like, the music was just, like, wrong for every single character, and it didn't come in on time, and it was just, like, really awkward. And
They picked really aggressive music for everything, no matter who it was. It was really... Which was a real disservice to the cosplayers most of the time.
Yeah. Yep. Agreement.
On the other hand, for things that were done well, my mind was blown by how many people in the performance part had choreographed musical numbers.
Right.
I saw three really well choreographed musical numbers. That blew my mind.
DaishoCon has risen in caliber of cosplay contest pretty steadily over the years. It's been known as, like, oh, you're entering Daisho's cosplay contest? Like, that's like a big thing.
It's a lot different from the garbage years when I ran it.
Oh. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm making fun of myself.
Hush yourself.
For those who don't know, I used to run Daisho's cosplay contest, so for 5 years.
I'm just saying, like, the caliber of cosplay that is coming to the contest.
Right, it's been insane.
Is becoming almost like ASEN level. Like, some of these cosplays should, like, be showing themselves at ASEN.
Added that bonus. Good. the halftime show was really cool too. Admittedly, this is one of the big reasons I went, was a friend of mine's dance troupe got brought in to do aerial acrobatics dancing for the halftime show, and this time they did it with a Guardians of the Galaxy theme, and that was mind-boggling. They were fantastic. That was how to do a halftime show right there.
Right.
It was amazing.
Just show us something really cool. Don't have us interact or, like, do quizzes or tell us jokes. Like, just...
It was really cool. It was
show
really
us something cool.
Well, okay, so I'm going to agree that it was a really good halftime show idea and good, but I'm just going to defend that maybe some of those other things aren't necessarily bad if they're done well again.
That's true.
Because those are maybe things that I've done while hosting cosplay contest halftime shows again.
It's stuff I've done too, but it doesn't change the fact that this was
right,
objectively
this is,
better. I'm sorry. It was objectively
right,
better.
Right. If you can afford the aerial acrobatics, do the aerial acrobatics.
I'm just saying, I've been to a lot of cosplay contests.
Oh, well, that
and some of them have had really
shows.
Bad halftime ideas.
I have hosted cosplay contests with really bad halftime shows that were not my fault.
I was really impressed by that. When I did interact with the staff, they were always very up for helping and very attuned to what was going on and seemed really excited to be there. So I want to give the staff credit where credit is due. I didn't see anyone that seemed like they were slacking off or didn't want to help. And that was nice. I really liked that. Overall, I really did enjoy this.
And your panels went well too, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Even if they marathoned you.
Yeah, even selfishly speaking, yeah, I did a bunch of stuff with Takoyaki Entertainment, including the Genjimen hosted roast of Nikizumi, which was super fun.
The very drunk Genjimen hosting, because Genjimen didn't have anything planned beforehand, so they just ad-libbed it all blasted on hard cider.
A lot of people said they really enjoyed that. Whose Line Is Good? The talk show with a fantastic guest in the form of Trey
Oh,
Dorn.
yeah, that guy.
I
What
think
a
it went really
jackass.
I think the talk show went really well considering they put it back to back with Whose Line Is It Anime, which meant that I had 10 minutes to set up a talk show
In a different room, yeah.
in a different room, which was not ideal.
Yeah, a little,
Rough.
yeah, like they put you, like you had on three panels
Three
almost all in a
panels
row
in
in
three
three different
different
rooms. Like if you've, you
rooms.
know, this is a minor nitpick, but if you're gonna schedule the same, all the, like, someone's panels in a row, maybe, like, put them in the same room.
That would have been really cool to not have to keep room surfing, because yeah, it was three straight panels in three different rooms in one night, and that was a little overwhelming, but we made it work.
So,
The stand-up thing went really well too.
yes.
So
So in summation, we all had a really good time.
yeah, Daishokan, really good,
And Daishokan was
really
really
good.
good, and their biggest challenges are just that they're getting really big for a space that needs an extra year to get bigger with them.
Yeah.
So it's like it's gonna be tight next year too, but hopefully the changes to the building after that will allow them to continue there, because, yeah. I mean, it's not the Stevens Point Ramada, but, you know, it
I
works.
miss the Stevens
That
Point
building
Ramada.
was so great.
I
So
really do.
this is the problem when you get old, is that as you get older, as convention spaces you used to go to don't exist anymore. Because they just, because, like, the early Daishokans were in the Stevens Point Ramada, which is a building that does not exist anymore. Like, this is a, like, it's not a thing. You can't go back there because
One of the
no
con
one can.
founders has a brick from it.
But I have news. So, Eric told me that he passed by the empty lot that used to be the Stevens Point Ramada,
Yeah.
and they're constructing on it. They're digging a new foundation for we don't know what.
Yeah, but they built a, they're building a, freaking hospital where the plaza used to be. I have
I
no hopes.
know.
But it's what I loved about that Ramada was that courtyard in the middle with the fake trees. That's where the Ambassador Alley was, actually. Weirdly there, but it was like, but like it was both Ambassador Alley was there and it was the room party area. And so,
Yeah,
like,
and like the pool was right
yeah,
there,
it was
and
the
like it was just
best,
like
it was the best room party area
beautiful
at a
open
Wisconsin con.
space.
So the problem is that all these Wisconsin, like, room parties have pretty much died at Wisconsin cons. Like,
Yeah.
Rave culture has basically replaced room
yeah,
parties.
but even like the rave culture killed like the high energy party rooms, but the low energy, like, relaxa party rooms also went away because none of the hotels, like, so the GeekCon's hotel, because of the way noise travels in that building, the Marriott is really hard on locking that stuff down. You go to Daishokan and Nobrancon's current hotels in the Dells just don't facilitate it well because all the hotel space is so disconnected from the convention space, and there's no good, like, courtyard area like you used to get at the Ramada in Stevens Point or the no longer existing plaza in Eau Claire. Like, they both had, like, workable areas that just don't exist anymore. And so, like, these there used to be these great common spaces inside the buildings that people could build their parties around that they just aren't in the Wisconsin cons anymore because the physical facilities can no longer, like, that used to really kind of make those happen easily just got torn down. And so you can find places like that in Minnesota, like Convergences Hotel. Like, is it, that is a good, great building. But it's just, yeah, no, and it's so it's really disappointing because that was a highlight back, you know, because I've never been, like, I used to do some stuff with the dances, but I've never really been into, like, that's not my idea of a good time at, like, midnight on a Saturday. My good time is sitting down in a place where I can sit down with some like-minded people, have conversations, maybe have something to drink, and just sort of relax. And those, it's harder and harder to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, like,
mm-hmm.
I just, because, like, we used to put on these elaborate, like, I know, like, Convergence definitely does the elaborate, like,
yeah,
themed,
like,
room
that
parties
stuff
and stuff.
Still happens but in, like, Minnesota.
Yeah, like, in Wisconsin, it's definitely died. You can, like, and I think part of it is just, like, the younger generation just doesn't want to put on room parties.
Well, okay,
they
so
would rather party.
So it comes down to a couple of factors. It's, and I've thought a lot about this. It's first and foremost is Wisconsin's room party scene was often very driven by other conventions. Other conventions would run room parties at other shows.
Yep.
What the problem, because there didn't used to be ambassador alleys. And so the only way you could promote at another con was to run a room party. Now with an ambassador alley table, which is far more economically successful in advertising, in getting pre-regs. Like, we threw, like, we used to, like, I remember, like, this room party that we threw once. We threw a DaishoCon room party, which netted us, like, 5 pre-reg. And it was a great party, and we had a super fun time, and, like, we, like, went all out and put up lights and all this other stuff. And this is back at the Ramada, but we got, like, 5 pre-registrations from it. And versus the Ambassador table for NoBrandCon. And versus the Ambassador table, which it doesn't involve paying for a hotel room for multiple nights. It doesn't involve, like, doing all that. And also now with these Ambassador table exchanges, we give conventions give free a limited number of free badges to each other.
Uh-huh.
That, frankly, as long as you can find somewhere to sleep, doesn't cost the convention anything to do that advertising. And
yeah,
will net you, you know, dozens of pre-registrations instead of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because people go to a room party to go to a party, not because they want to register for a convention.
Yep.
And so it's. But I do think the bigger thing that killed the Wisconsin room parties was just, I mean, I think the rave culture is part of it because less new people wanted to go to those parties, but I think it much more has to do with the lack of physical facilities because NoBrandCon, even in their last year at the Plaza, still had half a dozen room parties going that were still advertising around the con. You know what I mean? At NoBrandCon's last year.
Fair.
At the Plaza. And the instant that they moved to the Chula Vista, the instant we moved to that stuff kind of faded away because, again, there isn't a good place in the building to put them.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is very true.
We should get to the mailbag, though.
Yeah, let's look at the mailbag. Just let's get it out. Ken, you want to read this?
Sure. This one is from Gruff McGuff. Subject, what is Arkham's hiding?
I feel like he's used that one before.
Hi, Nerd in Time, third time writer, continuous non-exister. I know I've written about Arkhamize, how he's a tree with Dutch Elm's disease, and how he may be connected to a radical arboreal activist group, the Deciduous Liberation Front. I was going to say Libation Front, but that's a whole different team.
That's a different team, yeah.
We don't know.
More stuff keeps coming out about this. There have been recent allegations that Arkhamize is not just a member of the DLF, but actually a very high-ranking member. It's very odd that he stays so silent and hasn't come forward to refute these claims either.
That's true. Arkhamize.
Clearly, he has something to hide. And his anti-human agenda will have to come out eventually. Hopefully. It's before the trees murder us all. Also, cranberry sauce is delicious.
That's true.
It's very true. But
you know,
prefer...
You know, we went through this whole episode, and you know what we haven't talked about at all?
What?
And we're not going to? Justice League.
What? Well, actually, we could briefly say something on it. Did you guys see it?
No.
Yeah, so did not a whole lot of other people. It didn't make its goal the first weekend.
To be fair, the only reason I didn't see it this last week is because I was at a con. I usually would have seen it, but, you know, I haven't seen it, so I can't make a good turkey joke.
Mm.
I'm excited for MST3K Turkey Day.
I am too. I'm more excited for that than I am for Justice League.
I really just want to stare at Henry Cavill's upper lip, though. Because of the CGI.
Someone has to.
Mustache. Anyways, with that, Arkhamize, why won't you tell us what's happening? Why?
Arkhamize, I still don't think you're a tree.
I didn't think
tell
you...
Tell us... Tell us if you like cranberry sauce made from real cranberries or the jelly in a can.
I'm a big fan of... My cranberry sauce should still be shaped like the can when you put it on the table.
I grew up with made from real cranberries.
My mother is really... So my mother loves the made with real...
I don't eat cranberry sauce.
So my mother loves the, like, with the whole berries made from real cranberries, like, and making it herself, and it drives her nuts that, like, half her family is just like, no, just give it in a can. But it's because growing up as kids... Like, not having anything to do with Thanksgiving, but just, like, in a regular meal, my dad, if he was making, like, a roast or something, would sometimes just buy a can of cranberry sauce and put it as a side.
Yeah.
Right? But he'd buy the can, and it would be the shape
of
a can.
It's like having Jell-O as part of dinner.
Right. It was exciting. But so that's... That's the cranberry sauce that I like. It's the cranberry sauce that my brother likes, but it drives my mother nuts. Because she loves whole... So what we end up having at every Thanksgiving, whenever my parents make it, my mother, my father, and my wife, because Krista has been kicking in whenever my parents, like, host it and doing, like, a third of the work for years. She volunteered. It's her own fault. She's happy my aunt's hosting this year because she was like, Thanksgiving dinner and I don't have to make it. But... We there's the two things of cranberry sauce, the homemade real berry like thing, and then like the little cylinder just sitting on the table. All right, so the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. We're thankful for that because we're thankful for everything except for the things we aren't thankful for. You bastards. Anyways. Sorry. Just reacting to the top of the show, at the bottom of the show. All right, so the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is the part of the show where I read a sentence from a book, and the challenge to you, the listener/viewer, is to guess what book I'm reading from. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, we read your name aloud every episode. 2, we put your name on the website. 3, maybe an extra high five if we see you. We probably won't see you, though. So, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamize, Zero, Rin and Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slitheridi, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Van Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Soares, Paper Godzilla, Kavzi, The Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shizuo, and Sakura Sunset. Those are them. And now, because I forgot to open the book up on my iPad for the episode, I'm going to stall with words. That I'm going to open up the book and find us a random sentence to read as I wait for the book to open because it deleted itself from my iPad and I have to download it again. You know, this reminds me of a time when I was a child. This has nothing to do with the book, by the way. This reminds me of a time as a child where I said, hey, I could do anything I dream. And then reality said, no, you can't. Because you have yet to figure out how to fly by jumping off the couch and flapping your arms. Reality is a cruel mistress. All right, so the book is open. Oh. All right. The book is open. So this is your line from the current book. 3,000 years ago, cried I, when you and I had a warmer job than we have now, even this was hot. If you know a book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact, click on the forum, do the doobly-doo, and just say the words with your mouth. No, don't say them with your text. save them with the text, because that's a contact form. Or if you have anything else you'd like to write to us, if you'd like to explain why Archimedes is a tree. If you're Archimedes, you'd like to explain why you're not a tree. If you're anyone else who wants to explain anything else, and why Nick really looks like he's looking skeptically again at the video because he's been frozen most of this episode, just go to nerdandtie.com/contact. Give us your words, your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams. Or you can call and we'd play your voice here on the show by dialing 414-375-0480 and leaving us a voicemail. And we would probably do the same thing with the thing and the other thing. And we'd play your voice on the show. It's very exciting.
We'll do it. We will. We'll do it.
Oh, Nick.
That's all we got.
We should probably end the show.
Let's get out of here. All right. From the Nerder Dome, the Nerder Tie Dome, where we totally record this.
In Nerditoriums across the state of Wisconsin.
Making up Nerditoriums is Trey Dorn.
Woo!
Not making up locations that don't exist is Gen.
We usually say our names here, but he's Nick. Haha, got
Nick.
It. You said everybody else's name, go. But your own, which is not.
See, we got a pattern going.
We did the end wrong, but who cares?
Tuesday and I'm tired.
If you want to do things right, we can do a subscribe to Nerd and Tie on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anything else can take an RSS feed. You can also subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/TREGORN. You can subscribe to Nick's video essays at youtube.com/Nick Izumi. You can support us on Patreon. Nick's Patreon is patreon.com/Nick Izumi. Mine is patreon.com/TREGORN. Again, doesn't have those, but she does have a Ko-fi link, so it's the Ko-fi/Genjamin. And you can also follow us on social media, Nerd and Tie on Twitter, Nerd and Tie on Tumblr, Nerd and Tie on Facebook. Do you see the pattern evolving here?
Sort of. A little bit.
All right.
All right. Well, have a great night, everybody. Be sure to check in for us for all your nerd news. And remember to keep on spocking in the free world.
Dance party. No one can see Nick dance because he's frozen.
Damn you, Captain Cold.
All right. Now I guess I gotta find the stop button. Wherever the heck I put that.